Hello, welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. I'm your host, Father George Elliott, and today I'm joined by Greg Schlieder. Greg is an author, speaker, and movement leader passionate about restoring faith, family, and culture. In addition to directing communication and marketing for the Institute of American Constitutional Thought and Leadership, he leads Image Trinity, a dynamic marriage and family movement, and offers thought-provoking commentary on his blog, GregorianRant.us. He hosts the popular radio program and podcast Ignite Radio Live alongside his wife, fostering meaningful conversations that inspire transformation. They are blessed with 7 children, 1 in heaven, and a growing number of grandchildren. His recent books are The Magnificent Piglets of Pigletsville, 12 Roses, and Slaying Giants. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Father George.
So, Greg, you're reflecting and just thinking and writing about so many different things, but you recently wrote on reverence, specifically reverence in the liturgy, and I really loved kind of the angle that you took and just a very free approach to the whole idea. But before we dive into that, I figured we could maybe share our worst liturgical experience.
All right, start out really soft, right?
Yeah, exactly. We've all been to horror story liturgical experiences. So what's yours?
Wow. So I wish I could say it was overweight nuns and tutus dancing in the front on the altar, but you know, I've heard of those stories, have not. Actually, no, Father, it was probably my first day working for a diocese, and I wanted to go to the Mass at noon. We sat around the boardroom table, and in that context, it just seemed way too casual. People sitting in chairs. There was no kneeling. There was none of the usual beauty that one would lift us up to God. And, you know, it just was troubling. I would say horror story in that sense of just, you know, knowing our souls are meant and liturgy is given to us for something so much more rich. But I will say this, is what kind of maybe transformed that. I asked the person who hired me, my boss, head of the NFP office actually at the time, and she simply offered this advice. She said she struggled with it from the beginning too, when masses would happen to be there and not in the chapel, which is 30 feet up the hall. Why we didn't go there, I don't know. But she said, you know, if God can condescend, why can't we? So not to diminish, no. I mean, in my article, obviously, I unpack the importance of this. But in that point, I do think it's important, like, what is the most fundamental reality of any liturgy? And probably a good place to start, right? That it is God's presence with us who condescends into our mess, even if it's those who are entrusted to open our hearts and minds and eyes and lives to a full participation in God.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good kind of reflection on it, you know, on those difficult situations. Mine was probably while I was a seminarian. There was an old Monsignor who is not, he doesn't fit the mold of the normal Monsignor, right? He was a country guy. He would wear a chasuble that was literally made out of a Ranger parachute. It was camo.
Wow.
And that's what he would wear for his green chasuble. And I was a seminarian. And at this point he was, pretty far along. And, you know, I have great respect for any of the priests that stuck it out through that crazy time. You know, if they made it to be, you know, 80, 90 year old priests and they're still doing the priest thing, I've got a lot of respect for them. But this guy, first off, liturgically, he was a little bit crazy. And then also his mind was going. And he would just kind of like take off sometimes and be like, oh, Father, no, come back over here. And so I spent the whole liturgy kind of like chasing him around, trying to, you know, just kind of pointing
get to him focused.
Okay, you have to say this now, Father.
Right. Well, something dear about that in its own sort of way with the quasi horror story you're speaking of.
Yeah. That he is just, you know, he was still trying to be a good priest, which I really appreciate that. And, you know, I think so often in these kind of liturgical horror stories, it's not so much that people are like malicious in this, but they don't actually understand the importance of reverence. Right. And so you do write about this in the article that you recently put together. You know, what really got you going on this concept of reverence?
So growing up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, mainly in a family with very devout warrior Catholic parents who are the 1% that really didn't simply performative take us to mass, little duckling sitting in the front row, was that for sure. But there was an awareness that intentionality mattered. Like there was an awareness that the subjective dispositional quality mattered, and they endeavored to foster that. My dad, who is quite German, had that kind of stoical value of form and loved ritual and loved liturgy. But he also had this thing that maybe we thought only the Baptists up the street would do once in a while, and that's let's pray from the heart. So that was very unique for me in my upbringing. And I'd say as we've gotten older, now they're in their 80s, and my dad loves to lecture. My parents have been, again, literally warriors in Columbus, involved with St. Gabriel's Radio and pro-life movement. My mom founded a movement to care for women who post-abortive, and just heroes for me, right? Just heroes. And one of these things, though, my dad is now often in praying the divine office, he would like to stop and give his personal commentaries or add his little inclusions of things, which for many, I guess, you know, it is that, you know, Catechism 2111, you know, that if we don't have a disposition at the heart of the discipline, it's superstition. I'll say that again, that if we don't have the disposition, it is important at the heart of the discipline, it's superstition, but that's private prayer. And I think that's a key distinction in this article. There's private prayer, not unlike David in the Psalms, right? In the very beginning, that was not, you know, the formulaic, you know, Psalm 51, base my book, Slaying Giants, yet to come out on this. You know, we pray it every Friday, you know, maybe even in seminary, remember, you know, it's, I don't say monotone, but there's a kind of formulaic way we would pray this together. Well, that's public prayer, and it is efficacious, and it's beautiful. And part of my article is to articulate for those of an evangelical, as Catholics appropriately understanding that, ought to have, again, a dispositional quality. Don't dismiss that there is a form, and when we observe the form that's beyond my feeling, beyond my emotion, that God is reaching his hands in and forging us. And it may seem repetitive, right? And so there's a little bit of a need to speak maybe to this culture too, because many, Father, as you know, may just get caught up in what they may describe as religious gymnastics. And they may, you know, be pining and need to know that at the heart, Matthew 7:21, you know, many will come in my name doing these things. Depart from me, I never knew you. That root word to know is a relational, conjugal kind of intimacy that is definitive for knowing God. We can't lose that. And many ought to, Catholics ought to rediscover that, yes, there's a great intimacy here. All that to say, don't dismiss that liturgy, love on Hildebrand's work, liturgy and personality, the liturgy is God's gift for us to imitate and glorify him. It's not, you know, what, you know, coming with a cup of Starbucks and, you know, crescendo of a song. And by the way, I'm the guy whose son is a number one song on Christian charts throughout the world. You may or may not have known that. Seth Schleter, Counting My Blessings, that's our son. We grew up with praise and worship in our home. But liturgy is, I guess I'm just saying they're both and, but the objective revelation of God and his son, Jesus Christ, of the lines of the road, which let's just call that love to bring us back to him. It's not something we determine. It's something in which we are determined. So in these conversations in the Schleter home, my brothers, my dad, and continued in our home, there's a culture of candor. There's a culture. Let's talk about these things and say, well, Dad, you know that I want to pray the divine office with you. And in other times, maybe, you know, I want to honor you and I appreciate the homiletics in between, you know, the pericopes of the psalm that we're on and is dear. I get that. But if you want at times to pray together with us collectively, my wife and I, our kids are out of the house, visit them. Can we just do this the way the church wants us to do it? And no, it is not a diminishment. It is not, it is kind of the nature, again, of God inviting us to bow, right? He's inviting us. He sees something deeper than just my disposition, something more valuable, right? Than whether or not it quote unquote moves me. In fact, I need to be shaped. That's the key. Like we enter this world, you know, which has elevated subjectivism, right? What I feel. This is the sort of thing of no, Lord, form me. I might use the analogy of a good scotch or a bad scotch. You know, if you don't know scotch at all, take wine, take whatever it is, music. You know, there's a reason classical music is classical music. Have that debate with a kid 12, 13, 14 years old. They don't understand. They're going to go for name your band of choice. It's going to be gone in 3 seconds. Classical music, there's an analogy here that our appetites need to be formed, and God gives us his church to forge our appetites, our hearts, our minds, our lives for the kingdom. And invariably, in the beginning, that's going to mean some perduring through times of maybe feeling like it's just rote.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love how early on, you know, you talked about your dad was so keen on communicating that importance of, you know, the interior disposition of the reverence. I think, you know, in the midst of these kind of wars about reverence and the liturgy and things of this sort, people kind of bifurcate those two things, right? They separate them, and it's either, no, we need to focus on the interior disposition, or we need to focus on the relationship, or we need to focus on the reverence. And, you know, I think that's the fundamental error, that if we can really see reverence as the way to properly foment that interior disposition and that relationship, then it, I think it relaxes the whole conversation, and it also corrects a lot of the errors, right? So often, I mean, I'm a pastor of a parish, and so I'm stuck in these conversations all the time. But the, you know, there's this kind of excessive rigidity in regard to reverence, in which, you know, people are going around and just, you know, kind of shouting at each other about reverence, or you're not being reverent enough. And it's like, well, you know, perhaps they're pushing back because they have seen this kind of hollow reverence so often. And it's, yeah, it's the kind of uniting of the two of those that seems so right. So you talked about the liturgy as well. So specifically, why is it that reverence and liturgy need to come together? What is the connection there? Why is reverence in the liturgy a specifically important thing?
Yeah, so it's God's gift for our redemption, not just this external state of justice, of aligning our hearts and minds in the right way, but it has to do with the whole heart, mind, body, and soul. I might even say it has everything to do with the current crisis of addressing mental illness, or I might say right mental alignment. William Most, in his book, Our Father's Plan, has a great phrase. He speaks of somatic resonance, you know, the word soma, body, and resonance, that you do things as a child, you learn to do things and observe them, and we ought to teach, you know, proper form, because it has a way of forming the interior. Now, you're right, that could, if we're not seeking and giving people the awareness that this is connected to the interior, it does become hollow. It becomes performative. A husband can come home every day and bring a dozen red roses, and it can mean nothing if it's not resonating with the way the husband is loving his wife. So liturgy is the quintessential, right, the source and summit of our existence. And I will say, as I'm older now, more and more I'm understanding this unsurpassed gift, inviting me to bow. In fact, I'll just make an admission. Like, I candidly, 7-8 years ago, and this may, you know, I don't fault people who have their hands open during the Our Father. I'm not judging them. I don't have a problem with people who receive on their hands. But my question began this way, not kind of a self-righteous, you know, I'm more holier than you, because there's the wormwood is whispering into that too and saying, oh, you're better. Religious pride is something I've confessed in the past, right? Religious narcissism, be on guard against that, people. Do I think I'm better because I'm observing or performing? However, the question is, Lord, what is your desire for me? And it does fundamentally, as with the Old Testament, begin with conformity of right mind, heart, and action. So I'll just say for me anyways, again, without judgment, we go to a Novus Ordo. I have greatest respect for extraordinary form parishes and all that. But I asked our pastor, you know, Father Adam Hertzfeld, amazing, wonderful man, very respectful, wonderful pastor. I said, Father, so in the Our Father, you know, what is the deal? Basically, he said, and you could correct me in this, you know, follow the deacon. And so what are the deacons doing? So that meant for me folding my hands the way the deacon was folding when he was folding them, bow when the deacon's bowing. And it meant, I think, receiving the Eucharist on the tongue. And in my case, you know, kneeling. Now, my wife doesn't kneel. She doesn't veil. I have a daughter that veils. It's different. So there's no judgment here. But I do think the first time I said, okay, the norm for me, if that's true, is even if it's there's no something written in the heavenlies of the value of kneeling, my pastor said this, and I need to die to my comfort level or comfort zone of not kneeling and receiving. And it was that, you know, that kind of quality of a child that says, almost like obedience, right? Like, so long as it's not immoral and it doesn't make sense, is the opportunity to love. It's the opportunity to do the right thing or to do a good thing. And then I will say, resonant with that is, Lord, give me that right disposition. Give me the heart. Give me a humble heart. And obviously to understand these, but this is the key. Reverence is bigger than my even understanding of it. Like, reverence, you know, at the heart of it, I think is this worship, the root word to give something worth. And we don't just create that in our subjective realm. It's revealed to us. And so what a gift for the church to reveal to us, if you will, dare I say, kind of proper form, and to conform out of love for God.
That's great. And so to wrap up, I was going to ask at the beginning, but we just had a good transition into the rest of the topic. What's the most beautiful or profound liturgical experience that you've had, you know, where you just came before, or you experienced that and you said, wow.
Yeah, great question. And there are a lot of factors, of course, right? Like it could have been that I just had a great confession. And it didn't matter where I was or who the priest was or how it was proclaimed, but my disposition was one of, dare I say, I was at the banquet and I saw the banquet by God's grace. My eyes were opened in a way they weren't before, and I was, thank you, Jesus. So there is that subjective dimension that is important. But objectively, I think that maybe what you're asking possibly is, I'm going to just many options, but I would say Father Nathan Cromley. He's a native son of Toledo, Ohio. Blessed to have many events with him. Some he leads, some we've led before. But when he celebrates Mass, this was what was distinctive. And this is the advice I'd give our children who've done videos on the gospel and everything else. I'd say, make us believe you believe what you're saying. Yeah. Father Cromley celebrates the Mass, and you if you walked in off the streets and didn't know anything, not theatrics, right? It's not drama, because I know the man. I know he's flawed like we all are, but he prays the Mass, and the words aren't just words that he's supposed to say, the red lines or whatever. You know, he is clearly recognizing that this is the font, the epicenter where heaven comes to earth, and we are brought back to the one sacrifice, you know, before Jesus Christ at Calvary, and his blood and water is being poured out, and we're invited to receive and to partake of that in such a profound way. Like the way in which he prayed the Mass, and my dad, this is one of his things, which I do admire. You don't say the Mass, you pray the Mass, you know. And I, Dad, I get it. Okay. You don't just say the rosary, rat-a-tat-tat-tat, you know, you pray, you know. So he has his meditations. And I digress. Father Cromley prays the Mass in a way that says, this is real. This is love. This is my heart. This is the epicenter of all that we could hope and aspire to partake of.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Yeah, a very similar experience for me. It was at a monastery. When their monastery had actually been destroyed by an earthquake, and so they were up in the mountains. This little wooden chapel, not fancy at all, but everybody there was praying, right? Like the monks, the priest, the people. And it was just one of those experiences of, wow, this is what this is supposed to look like. And I think, that example of prayer, that if it's clear, both internally and externally, that we're there to pray, that's really the thing that moves people.
Yeah. There's another one. If I could just add, when I was in Medjugorje in 1991, I know I respect the church's final decision, all that, but in the Mass there, it was 5 hours. And it involved, you know, it's hot and there's no air conditioning. I'll just say, at some point I had to surrender my comfort zone as sweat's dripping down my body and say, this is good, I'm okay. And I have nowhere else to go. There was something in that allowed me to conform to something greater than my physical human existence that was transcendent.
That's awesome. So Greg, where can our listeners find more of what you're doing?
Of all the websites, I'm going to say go to liveittoday.us, liveittoday.us, a daily reflection, custom designed for families, personal reflection, and et cetera, and get it free to your box at 6 a.m. every morning and be united in the rhythm of the church.
Excellent. This has been the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. I've been joined by Greg Schlieder. I'm Father George Elliott. If you'd like to find more great shareable content by Catholics for Catholics, check out catholic-link.org. Thanks for joining, and God bless. Thank you.